Hello and welcome. You are tuned in to the Money Control podcast series FutureWise, where we bring you the latest and upcoming trends in education and career. I'm your host, M. Saraswati, and today we have with us a very special guest, Akshay Chaturvedi, founder and CEO of Leverage Edu. Now, amidst the coronavirus outbreak, there is a lot of confusion among students. Some students prefer to study abroad, while there is a lot of uncertainty around whether you would be allowed to go abroad right now or not, which is why some students are probably taking a cautious stand. Let us hear from Akshay as to what are some of the trends that he has noticed. Hello, Akshay. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Saraswati. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So first of all, Akshay, right now, you know, of course, we know that there is a lot of uncertainty. The class 12 examinations, of course, you know, we don't know when it will be held. Mm-hmm. What are the things that students need to keep in mind, whether they should apply for study abroad or not. What are some of the trends that you have noticed at Leverage Edu? Are students still taking a backseat as far as study abroad is concerned, mm-hmm. or are they still open for it?
So Saraswati, let me kind of just take a step back and zoom out on the question you asked. To be more specific, so the class 12 exams being stalled out is not so much of a major concern, because over 90% of people who study abroad from India go for postgraduate courses. And these are people who are largely trying to level up their life studying in tier 2, 3, 4 cities. It's a very different audience if you look at the wholeness of the entire ecosystem. That is one. Second is, I think we really underestimate the universities at times. Universities have come forward in really unbelievable ways over the last 1 to 1.5 years. For example, they've launched multiple scholarships. They have launched something called COVID Hardship Fund, both in the US and UK. And in terms of the undergraduate programs, most universities have come in and said that, hey, I'm going to start a fresh intake in January for any student who's not able to get their exam results in time for the September intake. And they will ensure that the academic year is not wasted. So universities are also kind of moving step by step and saying that, hey, I'm going to be there for the students. And I completely empathize with what is happening in India right now. That is something which is very welcoming for Indian students at large. To come to the other part of your question, to the contrary, in fact, we see these numbers on the ground. We helped some, I can give you exact numbers, in fact. We helped somewhere around 70 to 80 students in the month of January. And in the month of May, we are going to be helping about 1,000 students. So just from a scale perspective, you can see that we've grown almost 10x in the number of students that we're helping from January to May, June. And the bigger reason for that is, one, given everything that is happening from macro perspective, people have realized that if they can afford to kind of study outside and be able to take care of the family in a more developed part of the world, they would want to take that opportunity up. And that is something that we are seeing pick up more in the last couple of weeks. But the larger trends, which have already been kind of working in favor of the international student, the student who essentially wants to become a global citizen, is that we have seen great level of kind of reforms come in from immigration authorities the world over. For example, in the UK, we had the PSW, which is called the Post-Study Work Visa. As part of which, a student, when they go out and do a postgraduate course in the UK right now, they would get 2 years of extended work visa. We are seeing similar laws gradually improving point-based visa system coming in countries like Canada, Australia, and other parts of the world as well. So when you put all of those things together, when you essentially put together the fact that, point number B, there's a huge rebound from last year. People who had put their plans on a back burner last year, but are now realizing that I have to live with COVID. I can't essentially have my studies suffer. So because of all of those things put together, the market is kind of really expanding out right now. We, in fact, we are riding tailwinds at the moment. And we've, in fact, been hiring more than 100 people every single month just to catch up with the demand. So, yes, I think great times for a student who's looking to go out abroad and seek the best possible program. Of course, it makes it more challenging as well, because there are more people applying for every particular seat in every particular university. But from a wholesome perspective, I think it's only better for the student.
I understand that there is also a lot of traction from Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities as well. So would you think would be their reason for kind of preferring foreign destinations in place of Indian institutes?
So in fact, that's not a new trend. That's been a trend from a very long time. And if I have to take you back to the last few decades, we have flight routes built out. For example, people from Punjab who would go on and go to Canada, right? Go and kind of build a career in Canada. People from large parts of Gujarat who would go to Western Europe or the UK. People from down south, Ernakulam and other places like that, who would go on, largely, still now they would go and build up careers in Middle East. Now they're also looking at Eastern Europe, Western Europe, or from Andhra, largely going to Tier 2 US, Latam, all of that. So these flight routes have always been there. People who want to go and settle in a particular geography where they've had more of their ilk go in before them and build a great community of sorts. Mm-hmm. So borderless word is something that not just leverages imagining right now. It's been thought of by a lot of people across the last many, many decades or centuries. That said, right now we are seeing people in this country who don't have enough employment opportunities and who also right now are realizing that maybe something that I am good at will not have the right economic opportunities or the right respect in my country. For example, if I have to do sports in this country, I will not have the same respect or the same kind of jobs or same kind of opportunities in terms of progressing my career that I would have for sports management if I do it in the UK or Australia. For example, there's a university called University of Twickenham on the outskirts of London, which University of St. Mary's in Twickenham, and which gives you a guaranteed internship in Chelsea Football Club. They have jobs that essentially directly lead into 14 months at ESPN. And those are great opportunities for somebody who kind of wants to build a career in sports. Or take a step back and think about, say, a decade and a half back, you know Chef Kaskana, right? Master Chef, who has been invited at the Obamas and Queens and whatnot. So had he, in the mid-2000s, early 2000s, had he been told by his BG that ek kaam kar tu khote Punjab Engineering College chale ja, or something of that sort, right? Then he would have been doing something which is not very specific to his talent, not very specific to something that he could have made a mark in globally. I think there are three generations in India in terms of higher education. The first generation said, let's do medicine or engineering. The second generation, which is mine, last decade, said that everybody should go and do a program in business or finance or things like that. And the third generation, which I call the three-idiot generation, the four-idiot generation rather, is somebody who says that I am okay doing something that I'm good at, something in which my specific talent lies. It could be the finance as well. And what we come back and say is that, hey, if you're pursuing something that you're good at, you also need to be at a place where there will be the right respect and the right economic opportunities for your profession as well. And that is something which will always kind of cease to exist at a better place in the world. So India could be a great place for a bunch of careers. It won't be for certain other careers as well. Automotive, it will be Germany. Fashion, it will be France. Finance, it will be the UK and US. Space engineering, it will be California. Wine making, it will be Scotland, and so on and so forth.
But are we also seeing, you know, again, you know, a lot of countries, of course, places like the UK, it is tough to find employment after you graduate. You know, there are strict conditions. Of course, now there is some flexibility there that they've started off. So are, you know, newer destinations probably in APAC, like say Singapore and parts of New Zealand and Australia, becoming more popular?
So, Sarasvati, I think because you mentioned UK, I would like to kind of clarify there. That used to be the case with UK up till last year. But like I mentioned in the beginning, that is changing at the moment. And if you see the macro picture of why it is changing, we have had the UK experience Brexit, as part of which over 2 million people have kind of left their shores. And even UK as an economy is looking for more people, more middle-income people to kind of come in and pick up a lot of those jobs and recharge their economy at the moment. And that is the whole Brexit episode is what has led into the PSW, the four city work visa coming in, as part of which thousands and tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Indian students are going to kind of go in every single year for the next 8, 10, 11, 12 years. And then be able to kind of get to a stabilized number, which the UK economy was at a pre-Brexit level. These things are kind of slightly more deeply entrenched from a macroeconomics perspective. And similar things are happening in terms of large parts of land resources available, but not enough people to make the most of these resources in Canada as well. For the last 5-6 years, we are seeing immigration pick up there. And similar things in Australia, New Zealand, all of that as well. So I, in fact, see this as a global trend, which is going to continue for a long period of time. It is not about just higher education. It's about people immigrating to a place where their talent can be widely respected. Their talent can essentially have more economic opportunities. And because these countries are kind of on the back burner, they also want to welcome this talent and create the best possible opportunities for kind of their larger country to also prosper because of immigrating people from countries which are high energy, which will pay the right taxes, which will also be able to add enough value by way of forex remittances, more people coming in as tourists, so on and so forth. But it's got multiple brand extensions and does not just stick with higher education. Higher education is only the beginning. You build up so much more on top of it in terms of kicking in the economy.
I also wanted to understand, you know, one other aspect. Of course, right now, the Indian government is trying to promote more of study in India and kind of, you know, stop the brain drain from happening. And of course, you know, there is also a proposal to kind of allow the top 200 universities from across the world to set up campuses in India. Do you think that could probably be one factor that could, you know, hold a lot of these students back in India?
So, Sarswati, I'll take a step back again on this one. I wouldn't necessarily call it brain drain. I think that's a very incorrect term that got stuck onto our brains, unfortunately, in the last, I think in the late 1990s when the whole exodus to US was happening, or slightly before that as well, in the early 1990s. Like I said, it's largely where do I find the best opportunities for the talent, and that needs to be met around with. So, for example, if you look at the macroeconomics of India right now, we can't create enough jobs for everybody. That is a true reality. We can have as many startups as possible. We can privatize a bunch of industries that are right under public management. But even with all of those things put together, it will be like really a very, very hard challenge to be able to create as many jobs as this growing country needs. And if I was policy making, I would in fact make it see this as an opportunity for the youth of my country to be able to go in and conquer the world. Like, for example, at Literature, do we really say that, hey, our mission is make Indians go in and conquer the world. And that is how we are also able to establish ourselves as a superpower. That is how we are also able to establish ourselves as a soft brain power who can add so much value to the world at large. That's what our country's motto has always been, Vasudev Kutumbakam. The world is a family. And we need to treat all of these policies with the same brush as well. That is one part. The second part is, I think studying India is a very phenomenal thing. We have, in fact, a small part of our business right now focuses on it, as part of which we help students from right now parts of Africa to come in and study at private institutes in India. We have, in fact, spoken to the government in the past and asked if we could assist with that and see if we can kind of break those numbers up. But again, comes back to why are you kind of studying in a particular geography? What are your reasons for that? We've largely seen that people want to study because they want to settle in a specific country. And of course, there are enough people who will want to settle in India as well and make use of things which India is much better at as compared to the entire world. Say, pharma is a great example. Manufacturing is a very good example, which is doing very well in a country. We are one of the largest in the world when it comes to IT services. But just like that, there are going to be thousands of other professions which are best suited for other countries as well. And hence, it has to kind of be at the right balance globally. And people coming from abroad to here, and people going from here to abroad, wherever the best opportunity suits them, where they're able to be in a position where they can take care of their families and be able to level up their life. I think that should be a borderless world is what I imagine. And that is the way I hope policymakers also look at it.
Akshay, just one last question from my side. Would you think, because, you know, right now we still don't know, people are talking about vaccine passports. A lot of countries have still, you know, shut borders to India. The whole experience of studying abroad is, you know, you visit, say, a country like the US and UK, you be there, you study, kind of experience the whole environment there. Do you think the delay in vaccination and other things could also impact study abroad for Indian students this year?
Nice one, Sarswati. So, in fact, it's been the reverse. We have had, if you will see, UK recently made an announcement a couple of weeks back that they have put India on the red zone. But within 48 hours, they had to issue a clarification that international students will be coming to the UK exempted from that. Similar thing with the US as well. They put us in a no-fly zone and then again come up with a clarification that international students are exempt from it as long as they get their vaccine and kind of have the visa in place. And both US, UK, Australia, New Zealand are closer to it, but both US, UK, Canada, all of these countries have also come in and said that I will conduct in-person programs starting September. I'm largely in a place where I'm saying that, for example, the NHS has done commendable work in this area, who have come in and said that every international student who comes into my country, I'll vaccinate them in the first 15 to 20 days. So you are, in fact, at a position as a student where you're saying that, hey, I don't know when I'm going to get the vaccine in India. But if I'm heading to a program, for example, we had one of these universities who was doing an intake in May. All of these folks, we had about 35 folks go to this intake. All of these folks flew in the month of April only, just before this ban came through. And a big reason was that, hey, I will be able to get the vaccine about 4 months sooner than I would kind of get it in India. So that is kind of playing on the student's mind as well, if you look at it from that perspective.
You know, because there have been, you know, some sort of delays here. So, overall, do you think any impact on the numbers would be there?
No, so impact on numbers, like I said, will not be there for these reasons, because these countries are also making it easily accessible for international students to be in their country. Second thing you also spoke about was the experience of studying at the campus, right? So, very rightly said. In fact, last year when we have had those online plus offline hybrid kind of environment in which students are studying, they haven't really appreciated it. And rightfully so. I think we have unbundled a lot of things in our life from a technology perspective. But we can't unbundle higher education. Because higher education is not just about what I'm being taught in the classroom. It's about that connection I make with the professor who's sitting on the board of a Fortune 500 company. It's about this friend that I will make sitting under a tree. It's about my independence of getting to live by myself, of me being able to do a couple of those internships after my academic arts finishing. So it's a lot of things. When I'm going abroad, I'm kind of not paying just for the academic tuition. I am essentially paying, or I'm essentially kind of taking that decision to be able to experience all of those things put together. And that is not replicable in a home, virtual, looking at the screen kind of environment. So I think people have realized that, and universities have also realized that, that students would not be keen for these just virtual programs, and hence the decision of all of these leading countries to do in-person programs starting September, like I mentioned before. And if you will see the latest news, for example, US has exempted people to wear masks if they have been doubly vaccinated. If you look at the vaccination rates for UK as well, they have said that they'll be able to vaccinate their entire country by early August. So if you look at Canada, they said that they'll be able to vaccinate the entire country by middle of September. So if you look at all of these trends, and you look at that these guys have procured enough vaccines, they are the kind of the current trend as well in terms of number of people being vaccinated in these countries on an everyday basis. It is all pointing in a direction where they should all largely be okay in the next 2 to 3 months, which also gives a lot of confidence to students. And I think it is this confidence that these countries and their economies and their immigration authorities also have, which is why they are being able to come up with these quick declarations and quick clarifications that students will be okay to come in. They will need to kind of come in with their vaccines in place. They will essentially need to come in with these starter points in place. For example, in Australia, they've just come back and also said that students need not necessarily spend 14 days in quarantine. Universities will have the authority to figure out how to make it safe for the students to travel in as well. And this is going to be in place starting January. These countries are dependent on international students as well, and the entire supply chain that follows through it. We are seeing that these countries are very proactive in terms of how they communicate with students, and we, as the counselors at the center of it, we make sure that we are giving the right information to the students. We are giving the latest information to the students. We are also helping bust a lot of myths. Because what that period unfortunately has also led to is a lot of people saying a lot of different things. It's very important to understand what's the right backed by data for communication that is really going to be beneficial for the students.
Thank you, Akshay. Thank you so much for your insight.
So thanks. Thanks, Saraswati. Really enjoyed the chat. Thank you.
With that, it's a wrap on today's episode of Future Wise. I'm sure you listeners would have gotten in a lot of insights from this discussion. If you want us to cover any topics or have any comments to offer, please write to us on ncpodcast@nw18.com. For more news, views, and other updates, stay logged on to mindcontrol.com. Thanks for listening.